You're listening to CLNS Media, powered by Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street. You're listening to CLNS Media, powered by Boston Barber and Tattoo, a North End landmark that represents the cultural epicenter of the area at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
This is CLNS Radio, the home of Internet Sports Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics Weekly Wrap-Up, your one-stop spot for all of the updates and analysis from this week in Boston Celtics basketball, both on the court and off the court. I am your host, New Bedford Nick, joined shortly by my man, the master of the hour, the master analyst, the man with the plan, Isaiah from Jersey, and we're here to cover the This week's games, Boston Celtics basketball. Monday started off the return of Isaiah Thomas, Denver Nuggets, visiting TD Garden in Boston. Not a fantastic game for Isaiah Thomas, although if you didn't cry for that Isaiah Thomas tribute that the Boston Celtics organization put together for Isaiah as he came into the game, then you're just not a human being and you're not a Celtics fan. It was a nice tribute. It definitely brought back some good memories from Isaiah Thomas's tenure in TD Garden. However, the Boston Celtics dropped that game to one of the best teams in the Western Conference, the Denver Nuggets, 114-105, took the L, the Boston Celtics, in IT's return, although IT did not score a single point and had been taken out of the rotation prior to that game. The Denver coach decided, I guess, to just give Isaiah Thomas, I believe, something like 7-9 minutes of playing time back in his own home court at TD Garden. But a loss, nevertheless, for the Boston Celtics. Moving on, Wednesday, the final matchup between the Boston Celtics and the rival Philadelphia 76ers. Boston traveling to Philadelphia for this one in the fourth of the series. Boston leading the season series 3-0, owning the Philadelphia 76ers, not just so far this season, but of course going back to last season with the 4-1 second round win over the Philadelphia 76ers. And if I believe I saw the statistics correctly just before jumping on the air, the Boston Celtics were 21-3 in their previous 24 games versus the Philadelphia 76ers. Not much of a rivalry. Definitely not the Larry Bird, Dr. J level of rivalry of the past. But the Philadelphia 76ers, minus Gordon Hayward, who sustained a concussion in the game against the Nuggets, minus Aaron Baines, who I believe left the game with an ankle sprain, what was deemed to be a grade 2 ankle sprain. And Aaron Baines has been fantastic against Joel Embiid in his spot minutes this year and last year. Despite being out, all of those players, despite Marcus Smart, who had been fouled all night by the Philadelphia 76ers, being ejected after 19 minutes of game time for shoving Joel Embiid in the back after receiving not just an elbow on a moving screen, but also an extended leg on a trip, which received no call from the referees, which was typical of that game. And Marcus Smart gave a shove to Joel Embiid, received the ejection. So, all that said, minus Gordon Hayward, minus Aaron Baines, who went down with a grade 2 ankle sprain early in the game, minus Marcus Smart, and with a free throw differential. I call this the free throw game, almost as egregious as Game 7 of the 2010 Finals, which listeners know I can't stand, is the game that broke my heart for a long time, that ruined my summer. The Philadelphia 76ers shot 43 free throws to the Boston Celtics 16, and 21 of those free throws were taken by Joel Embiid, who after the game said he is the most unstoppable player in the league. Yes, the most unstoppable player from the free throw line, Joel, because you had 37 points in that game, 20 of which came from the free throw line. Only 17 from the field. So Joel Embiid, yeah, very unstoppable. It's easy to be unstoppable when you're shooting free throws, especially when you're shooting 21 of them. That's five more than the entire Boston Celtics shot that entire game. And with all of that said, with all of that BS, the Philadelphia 76ers only managed to squeak out a three-point lead, 118 to 115 over the Boston Celtics. Interesting, if I might channel my inner Tim Donaghy, that the Las Vegas line for that game, the spread was exactly 3 points. So guess who covered the spread on that game? The Philadelphia 76ers, who lost the season series 3-1 to the Boston Celtics. I have a feeling we'll be seeing them again this season, possibly in the second round of the playoffs. Doesn't look like the Boston Celtics are going to be catching up with the Philadelphia 76ers for that third spot in the playoffs, but the Celtics currently in the fifth seed, only one game behind the Indiana Pacers for that fourth seed. So possibility of moving up and having a first-round home court advantage series. We'll see what happens. Then, of course, moving on to Saturday night, that was last night, the Boston Celtics head down to Michael Jordan Land playing the Charlotte Hornets. Kemba Walker, I should say. We have to introduce Kemba Walker first. It's like Diana Ross and the Supremes. You don't just say the Supremes. It's like Harold Melvin and the Blue Notes. You don't just say the Blue Notes. You have to say Harold Melvin. You have to say Diana Ross. Kemba Walker and the Charlotte Hornets. And, of course, the Boston Celtics dropping that game 124 to 117 after leading by 18 points, I believe, with 7 minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. Leading that game by double figures and completely dropping it, completely choking it away and losing the game by 7 points, 124 to 117. I have a lot to say about that Charlotte Hornets game, but I'm going to bring in my co-host, Isaiah from Jersey. Isaiah, a little bit of a bumpy start to the show because I'm a little bit kind of upset right now. Boston Celtics 0-3 this week. So after that soul plane flight that gave us hope, and after those nice wins on the West Coast, and after coming back home to beat the Sacramento Kings and the Atlanta Hawks, the Boston Celtics are, once again, tell me if you've heard this story before, Isaiah, on a 3-game losing streak. What did you see this week, Isaiah, that gives you hope for the future and for the remaining games on the season, or that maybe gives you cause for concern? What did you see in this 3-game losing streak this week? And let's not forget, Boston Celtics playing the San Antonio Spurs tonight at 7:30, so we'll make this show brief, and make sure to tune in to the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game show at 10 o'clock after the final buzzer sounds of that game as the Boston Celtics host the San Antonio Spurs. So the week is not quite done, but we're getting our show in early. Isaiah, what did you see this week? Talk me off the ledge, because I'm starting to feel like the Boston Celtics are floundering again.
What's going on, brother? It's always good to join you on a Sunday, you know, as we do this show, even when it's a week that isn't in the Boston Celtics' favor. They looked. I'm not going to say they looked horrible this week, but I am going to say they looked bad this week with the way things went. They didn't look like that, like the West Coast trip that they came off of really stuck to them. They didn't look like they were a team that could get into the playoffs and make a long run. Frankly, they didn't look like a team that wanted to do what was necessary, to be honest with you. I'm not actually sure I'm the guy that's qualified to talk you off of the ledge, because I'm looking over at the next Celtics fan and asking them to talk me off of the ledge. I'm not sure what we have. I'm not sure what we have with the Celtic team. What I do know is that it seems to be a team with a lot that, although they have a lot of talent, they don't necessarily have the right pieces in order to make a long run into the playoffs. And also, the team just doesn't have the right mindset, it seems. It seems that they don't have the mental stability needed in order to make a long playoff push. So I'm not exactly sure what we have. I guess we'll talk each other through this as we go through our show tonight and really see what was going on as we explore, you know, each game in depth and see what the problem was.
Yeah, you know, this season and this week just really epitomizes it for me, Isaiah, but this season has just felt like repeatedly getting punched in the face. It feels like an abusive relationship where you just, you know, keep going back to that, you know, that girlfriend or boyfriend that just kicks your ass and you just keep going back because I love her or I love him or whatever. And, you know, oh, but he does this for me. He's so good to me. Whatever. And you keep going back and it's just not fun. And what really bothers me about this week is not the fact that the Boston Celtics lost those three games. The Charlotte game was by far the most embarrassing. It was just you don't have a double figure. I believe it was 18 points, 15 points, with seven and a half minutes left to go in the fourth quarter. And not only squander that, but then lose by 7 points at the end, not even get a chance to really bring that game, to free throws, not even getting a chance to extend that game. But the thing that, you know, bothered me the most, and not just the collapse in that Charlotte game, and of course not the shove by Marcus Smart and, of course, the three-point loss to the Philadelphia 76ers. To me, that game was a win. If you lose by 3 points with half your key, you know, your rotation players out or getting injured or ejected, and you have a 7 free throw differential, yeah, and you only win by three or you only lose by three, I'm not going to take that one too hard. And, of course, the Denver Nuggets are hanging in there, right there at the top of the Western Conference with the Golden State Warriors. So that's a team that, you know, despite that game being at home, is a game, you know, and the emotions of having Isaiah Thomas come back, and, I mean, that was fantastic. I really loved the post-game show after that game where Taylor McLeod and Bobby Manning basically spent the entire postgame show talking about Isaiah Thomas' memories. They're young guys, a little bit younger than we are, I believe. So, you know, their Celtics, you know, your Celtics experiences don't extend back quite as far. I'm in my mid-30s, don't know how old you are, Isaiah. But, you know, the love for Isaiah Thomas and anybody of any age and any, term of fandom for Boston Celtics could fall in love with that Isaiah Thomas, that kind of blue-collar, lunch-pail, you know, king of the fourth, the little guy, that era. That was fantastic. But the thing about this week, Isaiah, and I'm going to get right into it, and I want to get your opinion on this, is I didn't like the regression of Kyrie Irving back to the Kyrie Irving of the pre-Soul Plane, Magic airplane ride, kind of shade throwing in the media. Kyrie Irving, after the Charlotte Hornets game, after the loss, went back and started doing the same things he was doing prior to that plane ride that I just can't get with. Kind of, you know, saying things about the coach, saying things about his players. I believe one of the main quotes that was circling around, you know, Celtics Twitter and, of course, Celtics Instagram and Celtics social media was Kyrie Irving's quote that the reason they lost was they need more maturity down the stretch. Need more maturity down the stretch. And he's constantly talking about maturity. Now, when he talks about maturity, and you keep in mind what he said previously, Isaiah, about, you know, this team and how the young players don't know what it takes to, you know, to get through the daily grind and get through it and win it. It's almost like I feel here we go. And this is the way the media was portraying it and the way it was interpreted by many Celtics fans on social media. Was it, here goes Kyrie. He's, you know, throwing his players under the bus again. I know you have more quotes, and before I throw it to you, Isaiah, I just want to get some of this audio in here. I did go and find some of the audio from Kyrie's comments in the post-game presser after the Charlotte Hornets loss, and I want to get to that real quick.
Kyrie, you keep talking about being ready for the playoffs. You're very focused on that. The way this team has a habit of blowing leads, can you fix that problem by the time the playoffs come around?
Well, we have guys that were not in the lineup right now, so, you know, that would also help. So judge us when we have our full lineup. So obviously, when we come out and play like this with a bunch of young guys down the stretch, figuring things out, you know, things are bound to happen, but there's no excuse.
So playing with young guys like this down the stretch, things are bound to happen. Bro, you had an 18-point lead. It's not young guys down the stretch. It's, you know, you had an 18-point lead and, you know, something happened. And I'm going to explain what I believe happened in just a second. Now, that may be an innocuous quote. The audio was not that great. That was as good as I could get it. Ran it through Audacity to see if I could clean it up. That was the best I could get it. But Kyrie Irving also made some comments about the way the Boston Celtics defended Kemba Walker. And if I'm not mistaken, Kyrie Irving, that was your man, but I don't know. I thought you played defense too. But the way the Boston Celtics schemed to defend Kemba Walker at the end of the game. So here's the quote from Kyrie about defending Kemba.
When Kemba gets it going like that, I'll try to beat a stop.
It's one-on-one. Mm-hmm. I have pride, you know, down the stretch. Try to come in and help as much as possible. Should probably trap him a little bit more like every other team does in the league. But we did. Torches us every time we play. No surprise.
So if the audio was too was a little bit too muffled, Isaiah, what he said was Brad Stevens didn't trap Kemba Walker, which Kyrie believes would have been a good idea because he, quote, torches us every single time we play him. However, at the beginning of that, immediately after the reporter asked that question, Kyrie Irving and the reporter asked the question about Kemba Walker getting in there, Kyrie Irving said, it's one-on-one. No, Kyrie, it's not one-on-one. It's 5-on-5, and you got to get your teammates involved. And this is what's getting to me about Kyrie Irving, and this is what kind of got my goat, and I'm going to throw it to you in just a second, Isaiah. I don't want to go too long on this thing, but I want to hear what you have to think about this. I watched that game last night, and I listened to the postgame, and not to call out anybody on the postgame show, but I heard blame for Terry Rozier because he took a bad shot within the last minute, and yes, he did. He pulled it back out to the wing and took a terrible shot from three that was contested. Not a good look. He can make that shot, but not a good look from Terry Rozier. Absolutely not. There was blame all over the place for Brad Stevens. And yes, Brad Stevens has some problems with when he calls timeouts. He tries to let his players play through it when they're just not playing through it, when it's not working, especially when you're shorthanded. But what wasn't mentioned last night on the postgame show, and what I haven't heard, is the 2 28-foot three-point jumpers that Kyrie Irving tried to take, hero shots that Kyrie Irving tried to take at the end of the game that didn't go in, and a turnover, and they did talk about this, but the turnover in the backcourt that Kyrie Irving lost after a missed shot turned into a rebound for the Celtics, ball handed off to Kyrie Irving, and one of the Charlotte Hornets players jumped in there. And Isaiah, tell me if you notice this, and this is what I see with Kyrie Irving. His box score, his stats, they look fantastic. Let me pull up his box score real quick and I get to it. His box score and his stats look fantastic. He fills up the box score. He had a triple-double just about a week ago. 31 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals for Kyrie Irving against the Charlotte Hornets. That's a very solid stat line. But when it comes down to the clutch, I get the feeling that when Kyrie Irving is in a competitive game and he's playing against other elite-level backcourt players, it almost becomes, like he said, one-on-one. It almost becomes Kyrie's duel with whoever he's playing, in this case, Kemba Walker. And it's Kyrie dueling, and he's forgetting about the game that he's playing, and he's forgetting about the game plan, and he's forgetting about the ball movement. He's forgetting about getting those open shots, and it's like, I have to out-duel, or Kyrie Irving has to out-duel Kemba Walker, or in other situations, James Harden, or in other situations, Steph Curry. So Kemba Walker, as soon as he hit that three to put the Charlotte Hornets in the lead with about a minute left to go, the first thing I said in my mind was to inbound the ball to Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving's going to walk this ball up the court, and he's going to take a three-point shot. And he dribbled around for about 5 minutes, and I thought, oh, maybe he's not. Please don't. Pass the ball. Dribbled at the top of the key and just left at the top of the key. 26-foot, 28-foot, contested by two players, three-point jumper. he's trying to out-duel players rather than play within the scheme. And then after that, he's not taking in the post-game presses, not taking responsibility for the things that he did wrong, but pointing out all the things that he feels everybody else did wrong, which may have merit. But Kyrie, you can only change what you do. So Isaiah, how do you feel about this? And I know you have something to say about the Brad Stevens stuff, and I know I just gave you a whole lot to respond to, but pick and choose what you want and go ahead and tell me that I'm wrong, that I'm right, where I'm wrong and where I'm right.
Well, I think we do have somewhat of an issue, especially the way that I see games are going, especially down the stretch. It's going to be Kyrie with the ball in his hand, and it kind of changes from certain parts of the game where Marcus has the ball in his hand and Kyrie is allowed to play off the ball. In the fourth quarter, he does seem to think that it's Kyrie time, the same way as Isaiah Thomas thought it was king in the fourth time. And we're going to live and die with how Kyrie handles the ball. When he wants to score, he's going to score. And when he wants to pass, he's going to pass. The problem is that I think Kyrie's alluding to the young players playing with him and knowing when to come, when to go, and when to stay. Meaning, a lot of the times when I'm watching Kyrie, so are the rest of the guys on the offense. They're watching him, and they're reacting to what he's going to do, which is a tough place for a young guy to be, especially when the stakes are high with the expectations that the Celtics have. So I think Kyrie is somewhat frustrated with how the young guys approach, how he handles the ball down the stretch. It's either they're going to stand in the corner and take a three, or they're going to get the ball and they're going to go directly towards the basket. We don't have too many playmakers. We pretty much have Marcus, let's say, and Kyrie, and let's say Al and Haywood when he's there. But as far as on the team, we don't have too many playmakers. So especially in the closing unit that we use. So I think Kyrie's in a really uncomfortable position of having the ball in his hand and knowing that he has to make a shot, and they're going to depend on what he does, because we're not going to give Tatum the ball five times in a row down the stretch. We're not going to give Jaylen Brown the ball five times in a row. It's going to be with Kyrie. So I understand what he's saying and where he's coming from. I don't know how we're going to rectify that, though, especially not this season, especially when I really don't think that's the problem that the team has. I think that's a byproduct of what the team is going through, trying to see how we're going to approach the end of games and who the winning rotation is going to be that's on the floor. I personally think the bigger problem is how the team has been constructed, and we're just going through the motions and seeing how that plays out. Too many wings means too many people having to play out of position and out of role. We really don't have a power forward this year to go along with Al. We have a bunch of wings that masquerade as fours with the team rebounding mentality. But that also means that one of those guys, either Kyrie or JB or Tatum or Hayward, whoever's on the floor at the time with Marcus Morris and with Marcus Smart, one of those other three guys is going to have to go down and do the dirty work. We know Smart's ready and willing to do it at any time. Marcus Morris, he's a tough guy. Although lately he hasn't seemed like he's been willing to do the dirty work and the things that are necessary. Tatum has a problem with it at times. Jaylen Brown has a problem with it at times. It's a bigger problem than the closing rotation. I know the closing rotation is what we're worrying about now, but to me, the roles on the team, or the mismatch of players on the team, as talented as they may be, it's not helping with how things are going as far as the closing. We're all limited in what they can do, and everything's falling on Kyrie's shoulders, and it's showing. I don't know what we're going to expect over the last part of the season. It's just up in the air. It's just really confusing trying to make heads or tails out of all of it. I just know that Kyrie isn't the only issue, and I don't think, and I think what he – look at the week he's had. It's amazing. And the guys do need to fall in behind him, but in a way that he can make sense of. I'm not sure how this is all going. It just seems like a bunch of square pegs that are going in round holes, and we're just trying to make the most of what we have going on. But to get on Kyrie at this point, I think, is a moot point. I think we have bigger fish to fry as to what we're going to do with the front court moving forward.
Yeah, and I think definitely right about a moot point. This is the hand that we've been dealt. the Boston Celtics, or this is the hand the Boston Celtics have been dealt, and they're going to have to play it all the way through. There's no drastic change. There's nothing else that's gonna change the dynamic of this team, especially for the playoffs. And I know that, we're gonna talk about some minor moves the Boston Celtics made to kind of shore up their roster just a second. But they should have made earlier. I think both of us could probably agree with that. They should have made earlier. But when it comes to the leadership on this team, and this is the last thing I'm gonna say about this because I know a lot of fans hate it when I harp on Kyrie Irving, but listen. The one thing I don't want to be, Isaiah, and when it comes to, you know, when I'm hosting the CLNS Media Boston Celtics post-game shows, and this is an extension of those post-game shows. This weekly wrap-up is an extension of those post-game shows. The one thing I don't want to be is the bipolar podcaster that after every win, I'm high as a kite. Kyrie Irving is the greatest player ever. There's nothing wrong with this team. Great, fantastic chemistry. Kyrie's definitely going to stay. Everything is great. And then after a three-game losing streak like the Boston Celtics just had, all of a sudden, you know, you tune into the post game and it's, you know, a funeral. You can hear, you know, the church organs playing. You know what I'm saying? The casket is open for the wake. Well, actually, it should be a closed casket. How ugly this season has been. But the organ is playing and, you know, everybody's wearing black. It's almost like, you know, somebody died in here. So I don't want to be the up and down guy. You know, so I've tried to remain level, not get too high. But for me, it all starts and ends, and I think you could ask any superstar that's ever played in the NBA, it begins and ends with the superstar player, with the leader. That is your leader. When a team does fantastic, and we've all seen this with LeBron James, it was one of the things that bothered Kyrie about being in Cleveland with LeBron, that when things are going well, oh, LeBron James, he's the greatest player on earth. He's the GOAT. He's up there with, you know, Michael Jordan, which, of course, the Los Angeles Lakers are now eliminated from the playoffs, so we can officially put to rest that meme about LeBron James can turn any team into a playoff contender. No, the hell he can't, and he's not the GOAT. But regardless, the superstar gets the majority, if not all, of the credit when a team does well. Because if the Boston Celtics had gone 65-17 this season, Kyrie Irving would be getting that MVP. It wouldn't be any of these other guys that are catching, you know, the heat for not stepping up, you know, at the end of these games. And if a superstar is going to take all that credit and going to get the supermax contract that Kyrie Irving is eligible for, that player also has to be willing and also has to be ready to accept responsibility when things go wrong. And I think if you look at that Hornets game last night, you had guys step up. It wasn't the most fantastic performance. You got 12 points out of Jason Tatum in 37 minutes. Not that fantastic. You had 15-9 for Marcus Morris. That's about what you can expect from Marcus Morris. Marcus Smart, pretty quiet, I think, even for in your case, although he did a good job passing the ball. 6 points and 8 assists. But Jaylen Brown, after having a couple of stinkers in the previous two losses, comes through with 29 points on 10 for 13 shooting, 5 of 6 from 3. So the guys are stepping up. And when you have Gershon Yabusele and Shemi Ojeleye basically playing down the stretch because the rest of your team is injured, and I'm giving Kyrie credit here. He did mention, you know, ask us about the team when the team is fully healthy, not when they're playing with, you know, half the team there. Gordon Hayward was out. Aaron Baines was out. You know, there was all kinds of, you know, situations down there in Charlotte. But Kyrie Irving has to do better. He has to be better at taking the responsibility for that, because you know what? When he doesn't, and when he starts, you know, going out there making these kind of, these flighty comments. I love that word that you use, and it keeps coming back to my head. When he makes these kind of comments, whether it hurts the teammates or not, I don't know. I think I would personally say that I've observed that, yes, it sure it has. But I think, you know, whether or not it hurts his teammates, it sure as hell doesn't make them better. It doesn't fix them. You know what I'm saying? The thing that fixed his team for that, you know, brief, what was it, 6 games in 11 days between the Magic plane ride heading to Golden State and then this three-game losing streak, six games in 11 days. That was what it was. And I believe there was, I don't know how, it was something like five or six wins and one loss in that time span. The thing that changed everything, and we all gave Kyrie Irving credit for it, was Kyrie Irving got on that plane, he brought out his deck of Uno cards, and he sat there and he played cards and bonded with his teammates. You had Terry Rozier with this quote out there, and we talked about this quote before, saying when Kyrie's in a good mood and Kyrie's, you know, whatever, we're unstoppable. It all revolves around him. They're saying it's all about him. So when things aren't going right, Kyrie, you have to step up at some point and really take some responsibility for what's going on with this team. And I think that there's a kind of a, maybe I'm wrong, Isaiah, I don't know, but it seems like there's almost kind of like a fault line between Celtics fans now, between those Celtics fans where no matter what Kyrie says or does, no matter what happens, they're going to love him anyway. The stands, the ones that, you know, that will give him credit no matter what happens and throw everybody else under the bus as long as they don't have to acknowledge that Kyrie Irving could have done something a little bit better, could have made a better play. And then there's other Celtics fans that are just getting tired because no other Boston athlete has been, you know, has been able to get away with just basically pushing off his own responsibilities on pretty much everybody else, including the coach.
But, Nick.
Go ahead.
But,
yeah.
Nick, let me interrupt you for a second.
Please do.
You are railing against a guy who, against Denver on Monday, had 30 points, 5 rebounds, and 4 assists. Against Philly, had 36 points, 9 rebounds, and 4 assists. Against Charlotte, had 31.7 rebounds and 6 assists. While you're watching some of his, some of the other players that are playing along with him languish and how they're going to play with Kyrie when he goes on these runs, I wish there was a way that we could get these points out of Kyrie without him dominating the ball. I wish there was a way we could go back to Marcus being a playmaker and Kyrie being off ball and still getting these points because he's pretty much playing the point guard, shooting guard role all at once. I wish we could just slide him over to the two and just let Marcus make decisions because he's shown that he's a really good decision maker. To me, he's the second best decision maker on the team behind Kyrie. And I'm willing to entrust him with the ball down the stretch to make sure that the other players in the offense, that they stay involved, that they're not out here just looking at Kyrie go. Because he's doing, to me, I think Kyrie's doing the best that he can. You know, and I don't want to pile on to a job that he has that's already hard. You know, he somehow feels that he has to be the scorer and the decision maker all at once. And I do wish that Brad would somehow find a way to take the ball out of his hands so that the rest of the guys can shine. Because that's what, to me, it seems as if that's what he wants them to do. He wants guys to have action, to have movement, he wants to still run the offense, but it doesn't seem like the guys really know, especially the young guys, how to play alongside him. So I wish the decision making will come out of his hands, go into Marcus's hands, and I think we can still get the same points as we're getting from Kyrie. But to that point, I am upset with some of the young guys and how they do approach the game. Jalen sometimes, a lot of the time, he gets a lot of the blame on defense, how he approaches team defense and how he falls asleep. Certain plays in the Denver game when his man went backdoor at the end of the third quarter in the midst of the run that Denver was on that really allowed them to pull away from the Celtics in the fourth. There's certain way that that Tatum reacts on defense. He's really long, so he gets a lot of deflections, but he's really, sometimes it doesn't seem like he has the intensity. He's just floating on defense. You know, so I'm not sure if that's what Kyrie's alluding to, the defensive part of the game with the young guys. But I do know, I do see what he's referring to as far as they don't know how to play with him. Last year was different. They were the plays. Everything was going for them, so they were completely involved. This year's a little different, and it's hard playing alongside of a bona fide superstar like Kyrie is. And you can't expect Kyrie to turn around and wait for these guys to understand it too. At this point in the season, I think I heard someone say earlier this week that at this point of the season, they just got to fall in line behind Kyrie and go. The question is, how are they going to fall in line behind them? What's their roles from there? Because standing around at 4 points on the floor, just waiting for Kyrie to do something and watching him get swarmed by the defense isn't much of an offense coming down the stretch of these games. And that seems to be how we lost three games this week.
Yeah, I agree with you to some extent, but I also think in a perfect example of the, you know, the four guys standing at 4 points on the court just waiting for Kyrie to do something. I'm going to go back, and you also mentioned, look at what he's done this week, and I'm going to go ahead and give Kyrie Irving full credit. I'm going to read you everything that he's done this week against Denver. 30 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 steals to go with the block on 10 of 23 shooting. That's a fantastic game. I love Kyrie Irving. He was minus 2 in that game, but, I mean, nobody was in the plus on the Boston Celtics that game. Against the Sixers, Kyrie Irving, 36 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists, and a block against the Philadelphia 76ers. Fantastic game for Kyrie Irving. Against the Hornets, 31 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals for Kyrie Irving. But, again, as I began, and I'm not going to stay on Kyrie Irving too long because I know the fans hate it. They don't like it when we start, analyzing Kyrie Irving down to the, you know, subatomic particles and stuff like that. But like I said at the intro of the show, Kyrie Irving's stats always, or most of the time, look good. It's those crunch plays, those crunch time plays. And you mentioned, you know, the players are standing around and watching and not really working with Kyrie. And I agree, they deserve some responsibility as well. But if you're in, you know, I don't know what the analogy would be, but if you're in a, you know, military unit, the person that's in command of that unit takes responsibility. If everybody in that unit dies, they don't say, oh, the grunt at the back, you know, that just got out of boot camp, man, he really effed it up for everybody. It's the guy at the front that has his, you know what I'm saying, the officer that knows what he's doing, that, you know, takes the responsibility. And I look at that play at the end of that game. After Kemba Walker hit that three to put the Charlotte Hornets ahead, Kyrie Irving, the fact that I could predict it means that the Charlotte Hornets could predict it too. And Kyrie Irving dribbled that ball up. He took it basically just to the left wing behind the three-point line. He dribbled for about 5 seconds. And the thing about it was, I knew that he was going to shoot that three, and he wasn't dribbling to look for somebody that, you know, that could to get open. He was dribbling to get himself open so that he could take that shot, because he was so worried with going, as he said in that quote, one-on-one with Kemba Walker, without dueling Kemba Walker, that he wasn't looking for. So there's a combination there. I think part of it is his teammates, they're not getting in the right position to make some of those plays sometimes. Maybe they're standing back and, you know, watching it happen. Maybe they're thinking, well, shit, I just don't want to get in his way because, you know, he's a man. He's going to take that last shot. But Kyrie Irving needs to, you know, understand, listen, you got two guys coming and pressuring you. You can't take that shot regardless of what happens. Even if Jaylen Brown and somebody else is just standing there, dribble not to look for that shot. Dribble to find, you know, an open guy, or dribble to get a guy open. Him dribbling, knowing that he's going to pass, him dribbling with the intention of passing, is going to get his teammates to move, or get them more likely to move than them standing around knowing he's just going to dribble it till he shoots. He's just going to dribble it till he shoots. And you know what I mean? They need to be better at working together to get those shots going. And the final shot in these kinds of situations, or the clutch shot in these type of situations, can't always be Kyrie. Sometimes it has to be Marcus Morris, like it was against the Oklahoma City Thunder, what was that, last year or earlier this year? You know, sometimes it has to be somebody else. And that's the way Brad Stevens' system works, and it can't work like that for 47 minutes of a game, and then the last minute, it's Kyrie time.
But it's not even the last minute, though. It's like the last 6 minutes of a game. Kyrie comes back in around the six-minute mark. And then after that, it's like the Kyrie show down the stretch. Everyone else gets their points opportunistically, but we're clearing out for Kyrie 9 out of 10 times, it seems like. You know, so that's So what you're saying, everything that you just said, I still don't think those are the reasons why we lost those games this week at all. I think that the Denver game we lost, and the Philly game we lost, due to the lack of size that we have on our team. We didn't have enough size and athleticism to deal with Jokic, and we didn't have enough to deal with Embiid. The Celtics always struggle with size. Al does the best he can. But if he's the only guy that's defending him, I think, like I said last week, if he's the only guy that's defending these big men and he doesn't have the necessary help, and we're trying to like at one point in the Charlotte game, we went with Marcus Morris at the five. I mean, we are really lacking for big men and really stretching what the limits of a big man is this year, you know? And I think that's the real problem with the team. We don't have rebounders. It's always a team by committee thing. Like, how many rebounds did Jokic have by himself? And it seems like he got every key rebound. Look at Embiid down the stretch in the Philly game. It seems like he got every key rebound. I mean, we really don't have a big man who is tenacious on the glass, and that's something that is a fundamental flaw with this team, and it's wearing Al down. Like I said last week, look at him this week. He's hurt. He's missing the game tonight. He missed the game last night. I've been talking about this all season about the front court rotation. I think Al is out tonight, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong.
The last injury report that I saw was, and I guess we can get into some injuries, Aaron Baines questionable, which I don't know why. That makes no sense. We'll get into Aaron Baines in a second. Didn't mean to cut you off, by the way. Gordon Hayward questionable. Al Horford out. No, Al Horford is out. Well, Jesus Christ. Al Horford. Sorry. I'm going to cross myself, take the Lord's name in vain. But Al Horford out. Jason Tatum doubtful. Robert Williams out. Now, just to run that down, Aaron Baines suffered what was believed to be a second-degree left ankle sprain in the Philadelphia game and left the Philadelphia game early and is questionable tonight. It's a miracle that he's even coming back. However, in my opinion, we'll talk about this a little bit later. With the impact Aaron Baines has, I don't think he should be trying to come back right now. Gordon Hayward received a concussion in the same game, or was it the Nuggets game? It was the Nuggets game. Received a concussion or neck strain. He's in the NBA concussion protocol. Received what was described as a neck strain in the Denver Nuggets game and has been out since. He is now questionable for tonight. Like you said, Al Horford is out, left knee soreness. I think that's a lot of maintenance. I think if this were a critical game, if this were a playoff game, he'd be in there, no question. Jason Tatum and Robert Williams, both last night against the Hornets, suffered lower back contusion. Jason Tatum, a right low back contusion. He's doubtful for tonight. Robert Williams, a Time Lord, and it's sad that the Boston Celtics three-game skid and the, you know, controversy, I guess you could call it, or maybe the disagreement about how the end of the game should have been managed by Brad Stevens and by Kyrie Irving and by Terry Rozier's shot selection and whatever else has kind of obscured, and the injuries have kind of obscured. Probably the biggest highlight of last night's game is that Robert Williams, the Time Lord, got his first start of his NBA career. And in that first start, he scored 2 points, grabbed 3 rebounds and assists, and had 2 blocks. In only 10 minutes before just before half, he tried to he tried to Shaquille O'Neal that rim. He tried to break that rim, break the glass on that rim off a Marcus Smart, I believe it was, long Marcus Smart miss. Robert Williams got eye level with the basket and tried to bring it all the way down like DeAndre Jordan would have done, and missed the dunk and fell awkwardly. He did, but he was able to brace himself with one of his legs, but still fell on his tailbone fairly hard and is now ruled out for the foreseeable future. I have a quote about this, Isaiah, before we move on to this. Let me see if I can find this about what they said about Robert Williams. Bruised lower back contusion, whatever that means, Steven said, but I'm guessing we're looking at a Jaylen Brown time frame from earlier this year at least. Tatum's being looked at for the same thing. I don't know how bad it is. And Brown was out 3 games over nearly 2 weeks after his fall in Dallas earlier this season. So who's playing tonight? Well, everybody except for Aaron Baines, Gordon Hayward out, Horford, Jason Tatum, and Robert Williams. Well, the question is this now. Okay, now we're getting into this. I just want to do one thing real quick. Just because you mentioned Aaron Baines, and so we don't have to go back later on in the show and get to this point. Aaron Baines has been critical, and this is why, even though Aaron Baines is considered doubtful or questionable, Aaron Baines wants to come back. He sustained what was considered to be a grade 2 ankle sprain against the Philadelphia 76ers. And I think that he is so critical that trying to play him now in games where the Boston Celtics, they're not going any lower than the fifth seed, and they have two games against Indiana in which they can easily overtake them for the fourth seed. Why are they playing Aaron Baines tonight against the San Antonio Spurs makes no sense. And I want to leave you with this, Isaiah, before I throw it to the next topic. The 2018-19 Celtics, and this is according to Sean Grandy, he's one of the Boston, I guess, I believe he works for the Boston Globe, I'm not sure, but one of the Boston sports personalities up there, Sean Grandy, I guess in Spanish, Sean Grande, if you're from Brazil, Sean Grande. Aaron Baines plays 15 minutes or more, the Boston Celtics are 15-2 when Aaron Baines plays 15 minutes or more. When Aaron Baines plays 14 minutes or fewer, 22-21. Defensive rating, Boston Celtics defensive rating with Baines on the floor, 97.9. They give up 97.9 points. I guess that's extended out per, you know, whatever, the however they extend these advanced statistics out. But the defensive rating for Aaron Baines when he's on the floor is 97.9 points compared to the Celtics' defensive rating when he's off the floor, 106.2. So nearly a 9-point difference in defense, in the points given up by the Boston Celtics defense when Aaron Baines is not on the floor compared to when he is on the floor, and a difference in record based on 15 minutes or more, 15 wins, 2 losses, or 14 minutes or fewer, or 14 minutes or less, 22-21. So Aaron Baines definitely needed, and some size definitely needed, Isaiah, and that's going to lead us into the next topic really quick about the Boston Celtics size. But first, and we got to pay some bills here, want to remind everybody that this episode of the CLNS Media Boston Celtics Weekly Wrap-Up is brought to you by BetOnline.ag. I bet you thought I was going to say Boston Barber and Tattoo. No, it's brought to you by BetOnline.ag. Just go to clnsmedia.com/win and use promo code CLNS50 for 50% cash back on your first deposit on BetOnline.ag. BetOnline.ag is more than just an online betting platform. They boast a focus on the player approach and have built their reputation on offering clients nothing but the best, from cutting-edge technology, enticing promotions, and the latest sports betting odds. Arguably our most popular and well-known service, the famous Sportsbook, is where a lot of the magic happens. Here you will find live lines for all major sporting events, including the NFL, MLB, NBA, NHL, soccer, tennis, rugby, and so much more. Their live betting feature allows you to bet on your favorites quickly and easily and in real time. Your favorite teams quickly and easily and in real time. Client input is extremely important, so feel free to offer your valuable suggestions to help BetOnline.ag give you the best platform for all your sports betting, horse betting, poker, and casino gambling needs. Once again, go to clnsmedia.com/win. Use promo code CLNS50 for 50% cash back on your first deposit. CLNSmedia/win at BetOnline.ag. Don't know what .ag stands for. Maybe the website's in Argentina somewhere, but BetOnline.ag. And with that, size, Isaiah. We need some more size. We need some more body down low. We need somebody that can grab some rebounds. And there was a little bit of a false start to this one, but the Boston Celtics made their first free agent signing of the season with just, what, 6, 7, 8 games to go left in the season by bringing in, on a 10-day contract, your man, Isaiah, and at one time he was my dude, a little bit of a dinosaur in NBA, in today's NBA game because he doesn't really stretch the floor. Difficult for him to switch on defense, but Greg Monroe, back in Celtics green, signing a 10-day contract with Boston to finish out, or hopefully finish out the season, fill the gaps for all of those injured big men. You heard the injury report. Aaron Baines out, Al Horford out, you know, Daniel Tice is the only, Robert Williams out, Daniel Tice is the only big man, and of course Marcus Morris, who is now playing center, the only big man on the Celtics roster, now filling that spot. Greg Monroe, Yabusele, oh yeah, fantastic. He did fantastic against the Hornets as well. Greg Monroe filling some of that, filling that role for the Boston Celtics, and he is suiting up tonight for the Boston Celtics against the San Antonio Spurs. So what do you think about that signing, Isaiah? Greg Monroe back in green.
I mean, they need another big man. They need another body. You know, I just wish that, you know, it would have been someone earlier that might have been a lot more useful, a little more athletic, when there were more options out there. Now we're forced to go with what's left. And as you said, Monroe isn't the best option, but at least he provides some offensive punch. He can put the ball in the bucket, and he can definitely rebound. So Monroe's going to contribute in the ways that he can. It's just on the defensive end. He's like a sliding door. He tries really hard, you know, but his feet don't necessarily move the way that they're supposed to recover on the defensive end. So that's something we're going to have to live with, because we dipped into the free agent market really, really late. I'm not sure if he's going to qualify for the playoff roster. That's how late it is. But better have someone now than not have someone at all, and have to go with Marcus Morris at center again.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the rule is, if I'm not mistaken, and again, I've been mistaken about a lot of things, so don't hold it against me if I am mistaken. I believe that playoff rosters have to be set by March 1st, and players that are signed after that are not eligible to play for that team in the playoffs. So this being a 10-day contract, I'm not sure that even finishes out the rest of the season. Let me pull up the schedule. I can tell you how many games and exactly how many days are left on the schedule. So a 10-day contract, and that would be starting today. Today is the 24th, and the season ends on the 9th. So there's absolutely more than 10 days. There are 10 physical days. And these contracts are 10 days, not a 10-game contract. So it's 10 actual days. So starting from March 24th, how many days are there in March, Isaiah? They're 30 or 31. So that would put him, if it's March 24th, that would put him probably up to the Miami 31. Game at Miami, the second of the home and away with Miami on April 3rd, I think. That sounds like about 10 days to me, right? March 24th to April 3rd, 7 days until the 31st, and then 3 days into April, that's about 10 days. So, yeah, you have one, two, three, four, five, six more games out of the 9 remaining, including tonight at San Antonio. Like I said, Greg Monroe, who was signed by the Toronto Raptors in the preseason or the offseason before the season started, Greg Monroe is a dinosaur in the NBA today. He's a big man that basically plays within, you know, 10-15 feet of the basket, and can't spread the floor the way Brad Stevens likes. Go ahead.
Attempts zero jump shots.
Mostly zero jump shots. I think he hit a 3 at one point last season, and that was kind of encouraging. But you don't want him doing that, just like Aaron Baines sometimes gets in there with this 3-point jump shot. The ugliest form you'll ever see on a 3-pointer, but, you know, he tries it. Greg Monroe, I think, will try it occasionally, much to Brad Stevens' chagrin, but that's just part of the system. I think the thing with Greg Monroe is, offensively, he doesn't help spread the floor the way Al Horford would, the way an ideal big in Brad Stevens' system would spread the floor. And spreading the floor is not just, we like to have all of our players shoot 3-pointers because 3 is more than 2. It also has to do with, you have a center that can shoot the 3-pointer like Al Horford when he plays, that forces the defense to make a choice of whether their center, their big man, is going to stay in the paint to protect the rim, or to be pulled out and guard the big man on the perimeter, like, for example, Al Horford. And with that big man being drawn outside to the perimeter to guard the perimeter, that then, you know, creates more space down low for the team, in this case the Celtics, to drive to the basket. It creates more space. It removes the rim protector from the basket. Greg Monroe doesn't offer that. Greg Monroe is going to be playing down low, and that's going to, in some ways, possibly cramp. cramp the paint a little bit. But then again, you don't have that many Celtics that attack the basket that aggressively. Jaylen Brown does, Kyrie Irving does, Jason Tatum does sometimes when he wants to. But the Boston Celtics game is very much focused around the perimeter game. So we'll see how that works with Greg Monroe. He is an effective big man down low. He has fantastic footwork. I've always given Greg Monroe big credit for having the footwork that he does. He can get you. Once he gets that ball down low, he has those fakes and he has those moves, you know, little baby dream shakes and stuff like that. He can hit you left-handed down low. And on defense, complete inability to not only switch, he can't switch the way Al Horford might be able to switch, a more fleet-footed defender would be able to switch. Getting Greg Monroe on a perimeter player on defense is suicide for the Boston Celtics because that player is just going to take him right off the dribble and there's no way. Moose, they call him Moose for a reason, probably multiple reasons, and one is that he's as slow as a moose, that he's just not getting back, he's just not going to be able to recover from a smaller, faster player driving. But he, like I said, he is still a viable rebounder. He's a viable low post presence if you want to play an in and out game. It's going to require a special game plan by Brad Stevens. And the added bonus, Isaiah, is that Greg Monroe does have nice passing for a traditional big man. He is able to see the court fairly well out of the post, so that is a bonus. He can pass the ball, but not the answer.
And he is a very good offensive rebounder.
Yes, sir. Very good offensive rebounder, which usually
great
results
spoken,
in second chance points. Exactly. So, you know, not a terrible signing, like you said, Isaiah. Not the ideal signing, but at this point, who's there?
Oh, terrible.
And for anybody that wanted Enes Kanter, this is basically almost the same thing. I mean, because Enes Kanter is slow. Enes Kanter doesn't really play three. Enes Kanter can't shoot from the perimeter. So it's basically, you know, about the same thing. And I would give Moose Monroe probably a little bit of an advantage on the passing, although I have to admit I have not spent much of my time watching Enes Kanter. But this is what the Boston Celtics have, and Greg Monroe will be in action, Isaiah, tonight, versus the San Antonio Spurs.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, me personally, I would have much rather had Kanter. Younger guy, less miles on him, more active, better rebounder. But they both have the same defensive flaws. And I think Greg Monroe is a downgraded version of Enes Kanter. But then again, with today's NBA, and with looking for more active big men that can shoot threes, these guys are getting phased out of the NBA. So it's good that we have a warm body. That's a big man that's above 6'10" that the Celtics can bring in and use, because, you know, it is starting to look like a mass unit out there. And like I've been saying all year, our front court is going to be what does us in the playoffs if we don't address it. So I'm glad that we went ahead and did something and got Monroe in.
Yeah, if not for the playoffs, at least for the next eight games or so, or seven games that are left on the schedule. And as discussed last night, there was a very insightful conversation on the post game show between Bobby Manning and Sam Sheehan, the Moody Mustache. Sam Sheehan was the first of the CLNS media analysts to jump off the ship for the Boston Celtics. So yeah. I've called him the Moody Mustache. I was so ready to have a happy, psyched up, amped show one night, and after a loss, I don't know why I was in a good mood, but Sam Sheehan was in probably the lowest mood that I've ever heard Sam in, and ever since then I've called him the Moody Mustache. He has one of the most impressive mustaches I've ever seen on a young man, so big ups to Sam Sheehan. There was a I totally lost what the hell I was talking about. Talking about his mustache. So whatever the point was, I totally lost that. Mustaches are fantastic. Great. Say what now?
The great conversation from the post game last night.
Yeah, and I don't remember what it was because I talked about the mustache. But there was a nice conversation about something. I don't remember what it was. It did have something to do with this topic, but I don't remember what it is. But going forward, it's about. I just remembered it because we're talking about big men.
Okay.
The possibility of playing Aaron Baines. Now, and this is the thing that gets me. The Boston Celtics, were rumored to have signed Greg Monroe 2 days ago. Sham Sharania of the Vertical, he's been kind of like the guy since Adrian Wojnarowski went to Yahoo Sports. Sham Sharania has been kind of like the in guy, the guy that everybody likes to quote when it comes to, you know, NBA insiders that get all this information, have all this stuff. He actually reported that Greg Monroe was signed 2 days ago. But then with Aaron Baines possibly coming back earlier than expected, Keith Smith of Yahoo Sports reported that Greg Monroe did not sign with the Celtics before the Hornets game, and the Celtics were basically depending on, you know, thinking Aaron Baines is going to come back. Then, of course, you had last night's game where Robert Williams, who has now sees, you know, more playing time, has a bigger role with the injuries that are taking place with Al Horford out, resting his knee. Robert Williams going out, you then have the Boston Celtics basically having no choice but to sign Greg Monroe because, like you asked earlier in the show, there is no depth, you know, even if the Aaron Baines plays. But the question that I have, Isaiah, before we end this topic of big men and we start looking at the games coming up this week, or we start looking at the Spurs game, maybe we can get some predictions for tonight's Spurs game and see what's coming up. Yeah, it's a game tonight against Spurs coming on about 15 minutes, so we'll finish up the show right before the game gets started for those of you that are listening and would also like to tune in to the Spurs at the Celtics, Celtics hosting the Spurs at TD Garden. The question that I brought up is, why would the Celtics even risk playing Aaron Baines right now in a game that is, for most intents and purposes, inconsequential because the Celtics are essentially guaranteed the fifth or fourth seed and are essentially guaranteed a first-round matchup against the Indiana Pacers, who are floundering similarly to the Boston Celtics right now? Why even risk Aaron Baines? We saw in his statistics how important he is to the Boston Celtics and the Boston Celtics defense. We saw last season in the playoffs how important he was to guarding a big man like Joel Embiid. Why would the Boston Celtics even consider playing Aaron Baines tonight, Isaiah?
I'm not sure. Like I said, maybe it's out of necessity. We don't know what kind of shape Greg Monroe is in. I wouldn't know why they would risk playing him. They would know better than I do based on the medical reports that they have. I'm assuming that if they're going to play him, that he's A-okay to go. So if he's A-okay to go, you know, they're still working on their continuity. They're still working on, you know, on their togetherness right now. This is a real-time problem the Celtics have with the playoffs right on their doorstep. So maybe that's something that they feel is necessary for Baines to continue to play with the team as the team is still continuing to grow.
Yep, I think that makes some sense. I personally would probably keep Aaron Baines out, knowing how important he is, knowing how thin the Boston Celtics are in the front court, and Aaron Baines being an effective player. I got in a big argument online. I don't know why I even argue with people about basketball online, because they just say things and they don't really know what they're saying. But Aaron Baines makes no impact. He's not a factor. That was the word that was. Aaron Baines is not a factor. And I cited the exact sources that Sean Grandy cited about the win-loss record and the defensive rating with and without Aaron Baines, and it makes no difference to some of these people. They just get an opinion about somebody, about a player, and it doesn't matter what happens, what changes on the court, what statistics you throw at them, what they see about a player, they don't care. So Aaron Baines, they consider not a factor. I personally consider Aaron Baines a major factor in the Boston Celtics front court depth, and I wouldn't risk it for a game tonight against the San Antonio Spurs in a situation where the Boston Celtics are basically Kyrie Irving's already talking about taking games off and resting, and you already see Al Horford resting that sore knee, that left knee soreness, I believe is his left knee. So why even risk it? If you take an L to San Antonio Spurs, you know, it's not the end of the universe. You know, even if you take an L tonight and the Pacers win, you're still two games behind the Pacers. You can make up those two games by beating the Pacers in the two games remaining that the Boston Celtics will be playing them. And speaking of the two games the Celtics will be playing the Pacers, the Celtics have three games this upcoming week, not including tonight's game versus the Spurs at TD Garden. The Boston Celtics will take on the Cleveland Cavaliers. Let me see what day it is. The Cleveland Cavaliers on Tuesday, March 26th, 7 p.m. Then on Friday, take on the Indiana Pacers at home, 7 p.m. That game will be on NBA TV, so everybody enjoy that one. That's going to be an important game, very critical for the upcoming playoff seeding. And then at Brooklyn on Saturday, Isaiah, we're going to get some a look ahead. We're going to get some analysis about the games coming up, what to expect from these games coming up, and how they impact, I guess, what I've been teasing as basically an unchangeable playoff seeding position. But we'll talk about how that affects the Boston Celtics in just 2 seconds after this brief commercial break.
Every neighborhood has a heartbeat. A place that represents what being home is all about. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Aaron Baines, and the list goes on over the years. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's a spot to catch up while getting lined up. And it's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the epicenter of the neighborhood at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
Back, ladies and gentlemen, to the CLNS Media Boston Celtics Weekly Wrap-Up. I am your host, Nick Sacento, joined by my man, Isaiah, in Jersey. And we are just about to wrap up this show with a look ahead at this week's game. As I mentioned, the Boston Celtics travel to Cleveland on Tuesday to face off with the reigning Eastern Conference champions, the Cleveland Cavaliers, Friday at home versus the Indiana Pacers, and then traveling again on the road to Brooklyn to face the Nets on Saturday, March 30th. Isaiah, let's do this in reverse because we have a game tonight, and I'd like to get to that game last and get some a little bit of predictions for that game last. Let's look ahead to the games next week, and let's close out the show with a little bit of pregame talk as the Spurs and Celtics tip off in just over 10 minutes. Let's take a look ahead at Cleveland, Indiana, and Brooklyn and get some idea of what you think the Boston Celtics are going to do this week. I think that at Cleveland looks like it's probably going to, should be, but again, anything can happen with this Boston Celtics team, but I think that's probably the one gimme that I see on this, on the schedule looking ahead. The game against Indiana at home is just going to be tough because I think Indiana understands what's on the line for them. They have much more on the line, in my opinion, Indiana, than the Celtics do because a 4-5 matchup is going to be the Celtics and the Pacers regardless, but I think that home court advantage is far more important to Indiana than it is to the Celtics. And then the game at Brooklyn, you never know. Brooklyn has been hot and cold this year. Brooklyn has some, some talent. They're a playoff team. They always have some added incentive to stick it to the Boston Celtics after the Boston Celtics stuck it to them all these years with that KG Paul Pierce trade, the gift that keeps on giving. What do you think the outlook for this week's games are looking like, Isaiah?
Aside from tonight, I think that we're going to go 3-0. I hope that we go 3-0. I hope that we can make short work of Cleveland. I hope that we can go in there with tenacity and with something to play for and really have a great game against Indiana. And then I think that we're going to top off a 3-0 week with a win against Brooklyn because the matchups are in our favor in all three games. And I think that Indiana, of course, is the highlight of the week. But Oladipo is the guy that kills us, and he's not there. So although it should be a close game, I think we do have enough to pull it out. So I'm thinking we're going to go 3-0.
3-0, I'll be a little bit more pessimistic because I'm always a little bit more pessimistic. I'm going to go ahead and say 2-1. I think Cleveland is going to be a win. Indiana has to be a win. I think Indiana is – as close to a must-win in this situation the way the Boston Celtics are. And once again, the Boston Celtics are six or seven games maybe, ahead of the teams competing for the sixth seed, the Detroit Pistons, are 5 games ahead of the Detroit Pistons, but also 4.5 games behind the Philadelphia 76ers for the third seed. So the Boston Celtics are basically playing for the fourth seed. And that game against the Indiana Pacers is absolutely critical if they want to have at least one series this playoffs, barring any miracle upset by the lower-seeded teams over the Milwaukee Bucks, Raptors, or Philadelphia 76ers. That could be the only series the Boston Celtics play at home if they can manage to squeeze out the fourth seed and play the Indiana Pacers in the first round with home court advantage. So I think I'm going to say 2-1. I think they drop one of the games that they shouldn't drop, but I think they have to beat the Indiana Pacers. So that to me has to be a win. And whether they lose to Brooklyn or they lose to Cleveland, I'd rather they lose to Brooklyn because Cleveland is just so embarrassing, but, you know, it is what it is, and I think they really have to beat Indiana. That's the game to watch. Friday, March 29th, 7 p.m. on NBA TV. Make sure to watch that game against Indiana because that has significant playoff implications. That could be the difference between a first-round home series for the Celtics or a first-round road series and a long road ahead for the playoffs for the Boston Celtics. But tonight, in just about 8 minutes, 7 minutes, 6 minutes, the Boston Celtics will be taking on the San Antonio Spurs. What's on your mind about tonight's game? What should the Boston Celtics fans be looking for in tonight's game? It will be broadcast nationally on NBA TV, although I do encourage everybody to go online, check out Reddit, and find the NBC Sports Boston broadcast. I don't know if that's legal to say that, but find it and watch it because it's always better to listen to Tommy, if he's there, and Mike Gorman. It's always classic. The Boston Celtics, according to ESPN's Basketball Power Index matchup predictor, have a 67.2% chance to win this game, although they had an 86% chance to win the game last night. They have a 67% chance to win the game tonight against the Spurs at home. They are, well, that makes no sense. The pick center makes the San Antonio Spurs the favorites, 1.5-point favorites. But whatever, what do you think about this game? You think the Boston Celtics pull this one out tonight, Isaiah?
I wouldn't expect them to. If they do, it's gravy for me because we're like MASH. I don't even know who's playing tonight or who might get hurt with the way things are going. Either guys are sick or they're actually hurt. Last week it was the flu, or 2 weeks ago it was the flu. Now this week it's a bunch of injuries. So I'm not sure who's going to be on the court. I hope that we can rally the troops. Put together a real good effort. That's all I'm looking for is a good effort. You know, I don't expect too much out of tonight's game. I expect more next week once they get a couple of guys back. But as for tonight, it depends on what we're looking at, especially with the game that we had yesterday. Coming into today was a travel day. I don't really expect too much from the guys.
I'd agree with that. I think that makes sense. Let me see if I can find the injury report, the most recent injury report.
Let's
check it out. I'm on Google right now. I did have an injury report. That injury report was from a few hours earlier that had all the questionables, the one that we were talking about earlier. Let me see what's in the past hour on Google. It ain't telling me nothing recent. No idea. So Celtics, Aaron Baines will play tonight versus the Spurs. Bad idea, but, you know, it is what it is. Don't know. I would like to know who's playing for the San Antonio Spurs tonight. I do have the game window open for the ESPN game window. The game hasn't started yet. The Spurs are 1.5-point favorites. Let's see if they say anything in this. And this is bad radio when you're reading things. Like, let me check it out. Let me read this real quick while you guys sit there and listen to dead air. So not sure who is going to be playing for the San Antonio Spurs. I believe the Spurs are competing for a playoff seed. They are there in the eighth seed. Well, they're not going to lose the eighth seed. They'll be playing for the seventh seed. So it's basically, do the San Antonio Spurs want to go balls out and get that seventh seed and play the Denver Nuggets, or do they want to sit there in the eighth seed and play the Golden State Warriors? I think the San Antonio Spurs are going to be extremely motivated tonight, not knowing who exactly is playing. But they're probably going to be fairly motivated, being half a game behind the Utah Jazz for that seventh seed and only one game behind the L.A. Clippers and the Oklahoma City Thunder for the sixth or fifth seed. So the San Antonio Spurs have a lot of room to move here with, what is it, 9 games left on the schedule. Half a game, as I mentioned, behind the Utah Jazz for the seventh seed, and one game behind the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Portland Trailblazers for the fifth and fourth seed, respectively, and could even conceivably, although I doubt it, compete with the Rockets for the third seed. They're four games behind the Rockets. I don't see that happening, but I think anywhere between the eighth and fifth seed is in play for the San Antonio Spurs, and I think with such variation there, I mean, if you're the fifth seed, you get a chance to play the Portland Trailblazers, you know, at home. That might be a better matchup than trying to play the Warriors, the Nuggets, or the Rockets. So I think the San Antonio Spurs are probably going to be fairly interested in tonight's game. I don't think you're going to get a Boston Celtics team that Boston Celtics team is just going to come in and run over the San Antonio Spurs, although, if I can get back to that screen, the San Antonio Spurs are a far better team at home. They're 42-31, and 42 of those wins, 29 of those wins came at home. So they're 29-8 at home, but only 13-23. That's atrocious. 13-23 is one of the worst out of all the playoff teams in the Western Conference. 13-23 is the worst road record amongst the playoff teams in the Western Conference. So the San Antonio Spurs do have the work cut out from it. It's going to be a pretty evenly matched game. You have two solid coaches. I think Greg Popovich has reclaimed his throne as the coach of the NBA. Brad Stevens take a backseat a little bit with the struggles of his team. But let me take one more look and see if we can find the Spurs injury report. Game preview. It's still 16 hours ago. Preview Boston Celtics. See, they say after another fourth quarter class. We're looking at a Celtics blog now. It doesn't tell you anything about the San Antonio Spurs. But they all get so well with the team led by DeMar DeRozan and LaMarcus Aldridge. It looks like they're playing tonight. Celtics injury report. Robert Williams out. Say what now?
No, you were saying?
Defensively, the team will need to limit Aldridge on the glass. So Aldridge will be playing. Not sure about DeMar DeRozan, but according to projected starters, here we go. Injuries, Aaron Baines, San Antonio, DeJounte Murray. I don't even know who that is. So DeJounte Murray is the only injury report for the San Antonio Spurs. The projected starters, Kyrie Irving, Marcus Smart, Jason Tatum, Marcus Morris, Al Horford for the Celtics, Derek White, Bryn Forbes, DeMar DeRozan, Rudy Gay. Rudy Gay at power forward, that's interesting. And LaMarcus Aldridge starting for the San Antonio Spurs. So there you have it. Kyrie Irving and Derek White in the backcourt, Marcus Smart, Bryn Forbes at the two guard, Jason Tatum and DeMar DeRozan. I mean, that could be an advantage for Jason Tatum with the length and the size, but DeMar DeRozan is just quicker than Jason Tatum. Then you have Marcus Morris against Rudy Gay. That's going to be an interesting matchup. And Al Horford, LaMarcus Aldridge, that's always fun. We'll see who gets the better of whom in this game. Any last thoughts, Isaiah, before we wrap this one up?
No, I'm actually ready to go watch the game, brother.
The game is just about to kick off. So with that, I am your host, Nick Sesento, joined by my co-host, as always, the man of the hour, Isaiah from Jersey. Fantastic, as always, analyzing this week in Celtics basketball with you, Isaiah, and to all of our listeners. Thank you for tuning in, whether it's live or whether it's on Blog Talk, Stitcher, iTunes. Thanks for tuning in and listening to us talk Celtics basketball on the CLNS Media Boston Celtics Weekly Wrap-Up.